12. Melisma, Gaff, and a dozen other Wrynn slogged through the shin-deep mud that had formed in the wake of Ruin's most recent on-command downpour. Conditions in Facility 17 were deteriorating rapidly, and no one was smiling, not even Gaff, who was usually unflappingly sanguine in the worst of situations. The camp's overseers had requested that the Wrynn report to the familiarization sector for purposes yet to be disclosed. A facsimile of civilization as defined by any number of core worlds, the sector functioned as a training and indoctrination ground for those refugees bound for the heart of the New Republic. Despite Salish Ag's attempt to maroon on Ruin as many refugees as possible, a host of worlds and corporations had similar employment scenarios in mind for the displaced peoples of the outer and mid-rims. Optical concerns were seeking species with innate visual acuity, and acoustical concerns sought species with expanded ranges of hearing. Some companies were desirous of nothing more than folks of size and brute strength. Still, most of the refugees had never resided in the colonies, let alone on core worlds, and so the need for indoctrination classes meant to bring the culturally deprived up to speed for their new lives. Melisma and the rest trudged past crude buildings and pavilions where basic was being taught to Rurians and Dugs. Other structures were devoted to instructive sessions in interfacing with droids, computers, and virtual life forms, riding turbo lifts, drop shafts, and beltways, dealing with Bacta treatments, Durasheet, and Flimsoplast, the use of comlinks, holoprojectors, and conform loungers, proper behavior in restaurants, theaters, and other public places, and comportment in the presence of the wealthy, the politically connected, or the influential. The Wrynn contingent had been directed to Structure 58, which was empty when they entered, save for a grouping of rickety tables and chairs, and a human female whose eyes bugged out of her head on seeing them. She glanced at the display of a data pad she wore around her neck, quickly composed herself, and asked everyone to be seated. The fact that Melisma and the others opted to sit on the floor undermined the woman's aplomb, which was obviously as flimsy as the furniture, and once again she looked to the data pad for advice of some sort. "You've been asked to report here," she began in basic, "because an opportunity has arisen that could provide you with transport to Essels, as well as employment once you arrive." In pure surprise, Melisma turned to Gaff, whose optimism made a sudden comeback. "The job is somewhat peculiar, but as it is the only job offer targeted specifically for your species, I'm certain you'll want to consider it." She cleared her throat in a meaningful way. "Essentially, you would be residing in a kind of living museum, where diverse folks coexist, displaying to the intellectually inquisitive or the merely curious, the various and sundry elements unique to their species." No one spoke for a long moment. Then Gaff asked, "What exactly would we be required to do?" "Why, simply to be yourselves," the woman said in an unintentionally high-pitched voice. His former grin abandoned, Gaff glanced at Melisma, then looked back at the woman. "You're suggesting that it would be just like being here, except that we'd have thousands of visitors gawking at us day and night." "Observing," the woman clarified, "not gawking." Melisma shook her head in dismay. "I'm sorry, but we'll have to decline the offer," she said, speaking for everyone. The woman spent a moment gnawing at her lower lip, then moved to the door to ascertain that no one was about. When she swung around to the Wrynn, her eyes twinkled in a way they hadn't earlier, and her tone of voice was conspiratorial. "I shouldn't really be telling you this, but Salish Ag is prepared to furnish you with employment right here on Ruin." She paused to allow her words time to sink in. "I'm certain that some of you have had past experience on agricultural worlds, and that you would adapt easily to both the work and the environment. In return, Salish Ag would expect you only to sign a contract stating that you will remain on world for at least the next 3 standard years. "What does the work pay?" Gaff asked with elaborate enthusiasm. "Salish Ag will furnish everything you need in the way of shelter and food, and deduct the costs from your wages. The rest is, of course, yours to do with as you please. Although the company discourages its employees from actually accepting credits for fear they might be spent frivolously or gambled away. The last thing Salish Ag wants is employees who have overspent and have no recourse but to work off the debts they incurred." Gaff slapped his thigh in fabricated delight. "What a sweet deal!" When everyone had stopped laughing, Melisma said, "We're not interested." The woman folded her arms across her chest. "Won't you at least consider the offer? I'm sure you don't want to remain in this camp any longer than you have to." The scarcely veiled threat was still ringing in Melisma's ears when the Wren filed out of the building some moments later. She didn't know whether to be angry, anxious, or both. Fortune-telling had been earning the Wren enough credits to purchase decent foodstuffs, but business was already beginning to fall off. Without credits, the camp would rapidly become the prison it was meant to be, and in the end, she and the others would be forced to accept Salish Ag's offer. She didn't think she could feel more disheartened until they arrived back at the Wren encampment to find 2 human males waiting for them, no doubt to drive home the hopeless nature of their predicament and to sell them again on the wisdom of signing on with Salish Ag. And yet there was something about the pair that gave her pause. For starters, they were too seedy even for representatives of Salish Ag. The taller one was gangly and bearded, and his long fingers were tobacco-stained. He wore utility coveralls that were a size too small, and his boots were more suited to spaceport work than a desk job. The other man was equally unkempt, with grease under his fingernails and grime on his forehead. Black hair curtained his pale, pointed face and fell lanky and unwashed to his shoulders. "Lesh as it is, ruins a rock like any other when you'd rather be elsewhere," the tall one said to Gaff as he approached. "But every rock has its secret exits," the other chimed in, "even ruin." Gaff smiled pleasantly. "Yes, and every one of those clandestine egresses requires a toll we can't afford to pay." Tall seemed to take the reply as a good sign. "Then maybe you'd like to earn the toll." Gaff waved the men to a couple of chairs Ravana had cobbled together. At the same time, he asked someone to bring tea and food. "We represent a concern that provides private transportation to other worlds," Tall explained. 4,000s of credits per passenger," Gaff said. The man nodded. "But believe it or not, there are folks here with more than that to spend." "The problem is," the short man took over, "they lack official permits to travel. Now, normally their credits would buy them documentation as well, but Salish Ag is making it difficult because they have their own reasons for wanting to keep everyone on world." Ravana sighed. "We're aware of those reasons." "Well, then, here's the thing," the first man said. "The business concern we represent has official authority to transport a shipload of paying clients to Abrogato Re, which is accepting exiles." "Abrogato Re," Ravana said in delight. "A much happier alternative than any of the core worlds. Positively flush with opportunities." Tall nodded. "No camps, no labor contracts, no fine print. Everyone gets off to a fresh start. But unless we can show our clients' names on official permits of transit, all the credits in the universe won't get any of them off ruin." Gaff mulled it over. "Then you need a good slicer to enter those names in the database." Short shook his head. "Salish Ag is on the lookout for slicers. Everything has to be done by Durasheet and official seal." Gaff and Ravana traded knowing looks. "Go on," Gaff said. The humans also traded looks. "It's no secret that you people are good at forging permits and such," Tall said. "Yeah, like the ones you forged allowing you to emigrate to the corporate sector way back when." "Unsubstantiated rumors," Ravana said. Tall smiled. "Even so." Gaff cut him off. "Do you have an example of the seal you want copied?" Short opened a case and handed Gaff a square of Durasheet bearing an elaborate official seal. "This comes straight from Coruscant. Each letter of transit can list up to 100 names, so we'd need 5 of them."
Gaff and Ravana conferred for a moment.
"This seal and the calligraphy are intentionally antiquated," Gaff said at last. "We'd need the proper tools, along with the inks and such." Tall shrugged.
"Whatever you need."
"What's in this for us?" Melisma asked before anyone else could.
The same man shrugged. "That's entirely up to you. Clothing, food, furniture, you name it."
She gazed at him. "How about transport off ruin?"
Again, the two men traded glances.
"How many are you?" the first asked.
37, including an infant.
Tall deliberated, nodding his head slowly.
"We just might be able to arrange that."
"Only to Abrogado Re, you understand," his partner added. "No alternative destinations."
Gaff glanced at Melisma, Ravana, and some of the others.
"Abrogado Re would suit us fine."
Tall folded his arms.
"Then here's how it's going to work. We'll provide everything you need to forge the permits. If we're satisfied that they'll pass muster with Salish Ag and the spaceport authorities here on Ruin, you've got yourselves a deal."
"I am plan,"
Tholatin's Weequay security chief said as he joined Droma and Han in the Falcon's forward hold. Plan had the thumbs of his big hands hooked into the broad gun belt that gathered a quilted, knee-length garment the color of Srilor's desert wastes. His broad-nosed, desiccated face was deeply creased, and dark age spots showed on the almond-shaped bony plate that reinforced his skull from brow ridge to spine. His deep-set eyes gave him a haunted, fearsome aspect. Behind him stood 2 mean-spirited humans in camouflage combat suits, one cradling a new generation blaster rifle, the other a 20-year-old Blastech E-11, which had been the weapon of choice among Imperial stormtroopers. 6 other humans and aliens were inspecting various parts of the ship. Han couldn't make out their muffled comments, but the mere thought of them pawing through his property filled him with rage. It took all the control he could summon to keep from going ballistic.
"My first mate, Meek," Droma said, gesturing offhandedly toward Han.
Plan nodded.
"Sorry about having to search ship, Captain Droma. Furnished passcodes checked out. But as things are now, even we must take precautions."
A being more apt to communicate by pheromones than words, Plan spoke in a clipped and heavy accent. With the hyperdrive behaving erratically, it had been a long, slow trip to Tholatin, an uninhabited world, save for a deep, almost undetectable rift legions of smugglers had used over the years. The Falcon, going under the name Sunlight Franchise, had been directed to a landing zone on the floor of the forested cleft, but berthing spaces and maintenance areas were located under a ceiling of cantilevered rock at the base of a sheer cliff. Although he had taken heart that the old passcodes had worked, Han was troubled by the motley nature of some of the berthed ships.
"You have been to Esau's Ridge before?"
Plan asked suddenly, studying Han with interest.
"Not in a lot of years. Back then, who running things?"
Han stroked his beard as if in hazy recollection.
"Let's see, there was Braca A. Nasa, and an information broker named Formyaj. A Yao, as I remember."
Plan nodded.
"Long gone, with almost everyone from those days. Left when the Yuuzhan Vong pushed through on way to Hut Space."
He glanced at Droma.
"Where acquired those passcodes, Captain?"
"From a friend on Nar Shaddaa," Droma said, as Han had instructed.
"A human by the name of Shug Ninx."
Plan nodded again.
"Ninx is known to us. So you are coming from Nar Shaddaa?"
Droma had his mouth open to affirm that they'd arrived from Hut Space when a baritone voice rang out from the starboard ring corridor. "Plan, get a look at this." Han and Droma followed the security chief into the corridor. Just where the outrigger cockpit branched off, two human members of the search team had discovered the removable panels that covered the secret compartments Han had used for smuggling in what felt to him like another lifetime. Like Plan, the two snoops had the raw-boned look of mercenaries or pirates rather than smugglers, which jibed with the mix-and-match ships, the uglies, Han had observed in the berthing spaces. Plan was grinning bemusedly. Smugglers? Now and again, Droma said. Freelance or for huts. We're independent contractors. Plan snorted. Better ways of earning credits these days. Even huts have to take care. With Boss Bungie forced off Jubilee Wheel, not enough glitter stim on Ord Mantell to fill Bantha's horn. As he was saying it, a short man wearing mechanics utilities entered the corridor from the extended landing ramp. Looks like your ship has seen some recent action, he told Droma. Whoever you were running from ruined your new anodizing. Droma replied to Plan's inquisitive look. We encountered a Yuuzhan Vong patrol. Fortunately, we escaped with nothing more than a damaged power converter and hyperdrive. The mechanic pursed his lips, glanced around, and nodded. Vintage ship, but I think we can fix you up with the parts you need. Plan seemed to relax somewhat. Would not have to worry about Yuuzhan Vong patrols if you knew the right people, he said as he followed Droma and Han back to the forward compartment. Droma glanced at Han before saying, Knowing the right people is something we've never been especially good at. The security chief uttered a dour laugh. Perhaps luck is about to change. He walked to the entrance to the port ring corridor, then into the adjacent circuitry bay. How many passengers this crate carry? He asked without turning around. She's smaller than she looks, Han answered, taking a few steps toward Plan. Below decks, she's nothing but crawl space, and even if we packed passengers in like finger fins, the air scrubbers and oxygen supply couldn't handle more than 50 or so, and then only for a few hours. Why do you ask? Droma said. Plan turned and walked back into the hold.
Many here at Esau's Ridge do contract work for employer who has a direct line to Yuuzhan Vong.
Han watched Plan.
Yeah, a couple of friends of ours were working for a guy who claimed to have a direct line to the Yuuzhan Vong. But when it came down to cases, the guy was no help at all. Ever hear of the Peace Brigade?
Plan nodded slowly. Outfit of Rek Desh.
Same employer?
Same, Plan confirmed.
But in kinds of activities Peace Brigade handled, we steer clear. Many risks. Relocation runs our specialty.
Relocation runs, Han said.
Private transport for refugees eager to escape New Republic camps.
Han's eyes narrowed with suspicion.
Depending on what you charge for services, you're either a philanthropist or a predator.
Plan laughed. Because we receive large bonuses on back end, passengers pay only modest amounts.
So this nameless contractor is the philanthropist, Droma said.
To earn bonuses, contractor requires that we deliver refugees to specific worlds. Worlds that end up Yuuzhan Vong targets.
Han had to force his mouth to work.
You're recycling them. Refugees pay to leave one camp, find themselves caught up in an invasion, and end up in another camp.
He fought down an urge to tear Plan limb from limb.
And, of course, the Yuuzhan Vong are happy because you're making things all the more complicated for the New Republic relief workers.
Plan shrugged. Added burden for New Republic, but steady employment for us. Interested?
We might be, Droma said. Do you have anything going at the moment?
Plan made a regretful sound as he cocked his head to one side.
Too bad you not arrive sooner. Some of our people moving a bunch off ruin very soon.
Droma sat unsteadily at the engineering station, determined not to look at Han.
Ruin?
Han glanced briefly at him and began to pace.
Maybe we're not too late to join in, he said, only partially successful at keeping alarm and apprehension from his voice.
He turned to Plan.
How soon can we get the parts we need?